My name is Salim. I'm an 8th grade science teacher, creator of sketchingforscience.com. Welcome to School of Practice on Edutopia Radio.
Creative, hardworking, supportive, honest, collaborative.
This is Bobby Shaddix. He's a longtime middle and elementary school teacher.
Passionate. Unique.
And he's reading the first set of classroom norms he ever created with a class of 6th grade students, way back in 2012. Since then, Bobby has taken time during the first week of every school year to create classroom norms with his students.
You're laying the foundations for your community in your classroom. You are establishing a shared language that you're going to use to describe how you can be successful in the classroom together for the rest of the year.
I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school teacher. This week, we're talking about three teacher-tested activities that help students build real connections at the start of a new school year. And though these activities are engaging and fun,
come into the center if you like to play video games.
They are not just icebreakers. Education researcher Dr. Linda Darling-Hammond says these types of exercises at the beginning of the school year are essential for learning.
As human beings, one of the most essential needs we have is the need to belong. When that sense of belonging is there, children throw themselves into the learning environment. And when that sense of belonging is not there, children will alienate, they will marginalize, they will step back.
In just a bit, Bobby will tell us how he co-creates classroom norms with his students in the first week of school and why that strengthens the classroom community. Then, later on, we'll learn about a game that helps students bond over their shared interests at the start of the year. And we'll also hear from a teacher whose daily ritual for building connection in his classroom was featured in a hit Edutopia video that has been viewed almost 2 million times. Okay, let's get into it. Bobby, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
In our intro, we just mentioned the research behind the impact of students having a sense of belonging. We know that when kids feel a genuine sense of connection in the classroom, they become more invested in learning.
Yes.
Co-creating classroom expectations with kids is one way to start building that connection. Bobby, for teachers who want to try this, how do they get started?
First, we start off with some prompts. How would you describe learning in the classroom when it's going really well? Or when learning looks best in our classroom, how does it feel, right? Or what makes a great student? Or what makes a great teacher? They'll write sentences just responding to those prompts. Then I'll have them tease out adjectives from that writing in a small group. And then I would have the group sort of choose their greatest hits, you know, your top picks.
Okay, so each small group has narrowed down their list of adjectives. What happens next?
Then they bring those top five words to the rest of the class. And if you have four groups, you've got 20 words. Then you bring it to a full class discussion.
And how do you facilitate that discussion? I'm imagining that at the beginning of the school year, that can get a little tricky when you don't know your students really well yet.
You know, you have an object, say, for instance, like a stuffy or something you're going to be passing around to students so that they can have the floor. And the conversation starts off with like, which word do you think should end up on our final list? And so they might say, I think resilience is an important adjective to describe our work this year. First, I'll actually ask, like, what is resilience? I'll ask maybe for some examples. Can you think of some examples when that's paid off? And then we'll move to, like, let's do fist of five. Who thinks that resilience should end up on our final list? And then you look out across the room. If you're seeing mostly threes to fives, you know that word is resonating with kids, and then you can move that to the final list. If you see someone hold up a fist, then you can say, all right, I see a fist out there. Hey, let's hear from you. Why don't you think resilient works for our classroom, right?
And what are students getting out of this process?
The goal is that, like, by the end of that conversation, every single person can look up there and feel a connection and ownership over at least one of those words, and hopefully more.
Bobby, I have to ask, as a former middle school teacher,
yeah,
what do you do if you happen to have students who maybe need a little convincing of the value of this activity?
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you're doing this process with students and you start to notice people shifting in their seats, or you notice like students starting to engage in side conversation, it's important to pay attention to those social cues and to realize like maybe this conversation's gone on too long. Maybe we need to like shift into something else and come back to this. And I think, you know, just reminding students, raise your hand if you've been in a class where teachers have had a list of rules that you need to follow, right? And kids, of course, are going to be like, yeah, they've all been in that classroom. Mm-hmm. And just reminding them like, hey, this year, I want to take an approach where we're developing expectations together. For that to work, I need every single person to be involved in this conversation, because I want these norms to work for everybody.
Now, Bobby, for our listeners who want to try this activity with younger students, how would you adjust the steps to work for their vocabulary and their social and emotional development?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I actually went through that process. So middle school teacher for 16, 17 years, I made the shift to elementary most recently in fifth grade. And so I actually had to modify this process for it to be successful with elementary students. And there was a lot of trial and error. But ultimately, I think some strategies and supports that work for elementary students, you want to provide language supports right off the bat. So like, for instance, learning feels best in the classroom when I am, or I can concentrate during class when other students are, right? And so you're setting them up to use adjectives to describe optimal situations in the classroom, rather than asking them to like from scratch, like write sentences. I mean, this especially worked with younger students and also multilingual students.
Bobby, I have one last question.
Yeah.
Does co-creating norms work with older students? I'm thinking of our high schoolers.
So currently, I'm out of the classroom and I'm coordinating a youth radio program at WMPG. It's a community radio station based out of the University of Southern Maine. And it's 9th through 12th graders. In our recent discussion, when we're developing ideas for shows, we did not frame the conversation with norms.
And what happened?
The conversation went off the rails.
Yeah.
And then it totally occurred to me, it's like, we haven't really established the norms with this group. And so I don't have the shared language or understanding with this group of teens to help us pause and to think about what's happening, how that might be making people feel, and think about like which norms we might need to focus on in order to proceed in a way that's like productive and safe.
After the break, we're going to learn about a game that helps kids jumpstart classroom relationships at the start of the year. And we'll hear from a teacher whose daily ritual for building connections with students has been a viral hit with teachers in Edutopia's community. Okay, be right back.
Hi, it's Heather from the Edutopia team. The right idea at the right moment can change everything. That's what the Principal Project is built for. And now, it's part of Edutopia. Launching this month, this refreshed newsletter brings you the leadership insights, ideas, and strategies you need most, when they matter most. It's delivered monthly and personalized, so each edition is relevant and tailored to you. Ready to sign up? Head to edutopia.org/principalproject.
Once you look around at everybody, let's think, I might not know everything there is to know about everybody here.
You're hearing theater arts teacher Jocelyn Green working with a class of third graders.
So we'll play this game, and we can call this our circle of sameness. Come into the center circle if you took a trip this summer.
Jocelyn is the founder of Child's Play New York, a theater education organization. And the game she's leading is called Circles of Sameness. It helps students find shared experiences and interests. And she's here to tell us how to use it in class, whether you're working with third graders or much older students. Jocelyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now, Jocelyn, this is a classic theater game. You said you played this game when you were training to be an actor. Why does it work so well with kids in school?
It really breaks down those barriers and like lets kids find community instantaneously, connecting over things that they might not otherwise know about each other.
Okay, for a teacher who's never tried this game before, how do they set this up? How do they execute it?
Yes. Okay, so you gather students in a circle, turn on some music that'll feel like a nice background track and give a vibe to this experience, and then you just simply ask that question, come into the circle if, and you're on a roll. You know, come into the circle if you have a sibling. Come into the circle if you read a great book this summer. Come into the circle if you have a pet. The intention is that we have our students on the periphery, and then we have another moment where we're coming into the circle and we're feeling that connection. And even kids outside the circle are going to find like, hey, that doesn't apply to me, and I see you.
Okay, and then after that moment of connection, the students disperse to the edges of the space so that a new circle is created with each prompt. Got it. What guardrails do you think teachers need to set up before they do this activity in class?
I think the same things you would want to have clear in your classroom agreements. Be safe with your body. Be kind. Be true to yourself. And the questions, don't make anybody feel terribly vulnerable at the start of the semester. It's just like a get to know you. Hey, who's like me? Yeah, I like video games too. You know,
you're going to... We're keeping the questions a little light.
Keeping it light, yeah.
Let's give teachers like a toolbox here. What kinds of questions work especially well for this activity, and approximately how many questions should teachers prep for this game?
I think you can prep about 20 and you might not get to all of them. The questions you can ask are about pets, siblings, books, travel, summer stuff, things in the popular culture that they might be like, yes or no. And that's really fun for them to be like, I'm so over Frozen. I still love Frozen, you know.
I'm just thinking about this for my middle school students in those early days. I feel like pets and food and popular culture could be a little bit of a slippery slide. You might slide just right off track with those questions, but I feel like those would all be really safe but fun.
You'll get a big reaction with the pop culture stuff, and I think it's important for teachers in this game to just be okay with a little bit of chaos. The excitement around finding your peers who are like you, or being like, I have to tell you that I really don't like the thing. Let that happen, bubble up, and then have a smooth way to control back. Maybe it's a bell, or you count down 3, 2, 1, and we step out or something. Now, in between, you can create movement patterns that kids are walking around the circle, or younger kids love jumping around the circle, or sliding around the circle, or sneaking around.
Now, I know you've done this a lot with elementary age kids. Do you have any specific tips to set this up for middle and high school students? What adaptations would you recommend?
Have them write down questions that they're curious about their peers. You have to vet those questions and make sure they're appropriate. That way, then when they hear their question asked, they'll also feel like, yeah, I was curious if other people have ever taken a cooking class or something, but they don't have to be so vulnerable to ask it themselves.
Jocelyn, we know that fostering a sense of belonging at the start of the school year is one of the most important and also complex things that a teacher can do to sort of set the stage for positive learning experiences for the whole year. How does the circle of sameness activity build that sense of belonging for kids?
I think it allows kids to feel really seen and known, that in this space, people know that I have a sibling, love to cook, play video games, and I don't have to be like, oh, there's this stuff about me that nobody knows. Even though games like this may take 5, 10, 20 minutes even, it's so worth it to carve that time out. And the learning will happen even faster and more joyfully and more fluidly because you've created those connections with your students and with each other.
All right, everyone, I want to share with you all something we're going to be doing many days this year to start class. It's something called a daily dedication.
It's the start of a new school year, and Henry Seaton is modeling an activity that is a daily ritual in his own high school humanities class. On this particular day, Seaton is dedicating class to his own father.
When he was your age, he had to look after his mother who was dying of cancer. He often had to feed her, had to bathe her. And today he's a cancer doctor, just a super hardworking, humble guy.
Each day, one student comes to the front of Seton's classroom and does a short dedication about someone they admire, a family member, a famous person, even a fictional character. The activity builds trust and community among students from day one. And Henry's here today to walk us through his approach, which he has honed over many years with many different classes. Henry, we just heard your example of a dedication which comes from a hugely popular video Edutopia made a few years ago that was such a lovely story that you shared about your father. And it exemplifies how daily dedications work. They're about 60 seconds and they happen right before you dive into a lesson. Can you give us a few other examples of dedications students have given in your class?
So many dedications, of course, are to family members, whether to parents, grandparents, you know, who are still with them or not. But I've also had dedications to historical figures, to fictional characters.
What are some of the fictional characters?
You're putting me on the spot. I'm not a big expert on the anime world, but there are a lot of anime characters who have made their way into daily dedications. A lot of athletes, even influencers on social media, who inspire my students to maybe work out harder or study harder.
Let's walk through the mechanics of how you get dedication started in the fall with a new class. You've said that you always model this activity by giving your own dedication on the first or second day of school. Why do you do that?
Yes, I'm trying to model a dedication that is specific, that is vulnerable, that is hopefully inspiring, that is earnest and sincere. Sometimes I even stop after my first dedication and say, what did you notice about my dedication? Or what do you think my expectations are going to be for you based on the one that I just presented to you right now?
Henry, I love that you said that you are trying to facilitate dedications that are earnest and sincere. That is not something we usually associate with teenagers who are often very guarded in school. How do you help make space for sincerity with this classroom activity?
Absolutely. It takes a while to get there. Part of it is creating a culture of safety and kindness. I'm very quick to pounce on laughter unless it's clearly, you know, supportive, positive laughter. But if it's ambiguous laughter, I'll pounce on it just to make sure that we all feel safe in the classroom space.
And when you say you pounce on it, what would you say in that moment?
I'll probably just say, hey, pause for a moment. That laughter felt awkward because I wasn't sure if you were laughing with the student or laughing at that situation, or maybe just laughing at how awkward maybe part of that story was to hear. But let's bring it back in and give this the seriousness that it deserves.
The power of just sort of naming what happened in the room.
Exactly, yeah.
And quick clarifying question, are students getting their dedications approved with you beforehand?
No, they are not. And occasionally there have been dedications to political figures or influencers with complex public personas. You know, Andrew Tate comes to mind. But in general, students have earnestly dedicated to them. So I try not to invalidate the people that they bring in front of the class as long as it's brought earnestly.
Now, I have to say, Henry, when you said Andrew Tate, some alarm bells did go off for me.
Yes.
What do you do if a student dedicates a class to someone who may be offensive to other students who are also present there?
I think I just try to do my usual validate, invalidate, you know, where just thank you so much for sharing that with us. And then maybe just validate also to the other students in the room that this is a complicated figure that people in this room may have complex feelings about. But thank you for sharing that with us today. Something like that. Doesn't happen very much.
Now, how do you keep this going all year long without it starting to feel repetitive?
The students, in their wonderful way, you know, they do 98% of the work on that. They are just so creative and thoughtful. And then themes are another great way where one quarter you could do dedications to historical figures. One quarter you could do dedications to fictional characters. Another quarter you could do it dedications to people in the classroom or in the grade, to siblings, et cetera. There's a lot of ways to try to freshen it up.
Now, Henry, you work at a private high school in suburban New Jersey. What adaptations would you recommend to make this work with students who might have very good reasons to be less vulnerable in class?
One way is just to extend the modeling. Maybe I'll model for the first week or two, just to be very clear about expectations and how to respond to a dedication. I could even invite other colleagues to come in and do the dedications, other teachers, principals even I've had come in and share dedications with the class.
If students are nervous, you can have them submit dedications in advance to you via Google form. You could have other people read them. Even I could read them. I think at the end of the day, what matters is the idea from Matthew Kay of burn 5 minutes, whether it's 5 minutes a day or, you know, for me, it's closer to 5 minutes a week right now, just because I teach at a school with shorter periods, but dedicate specific time to actively get to know them, build relationships, to share their authentic selves. So often these daily dedications just lead to more and more conversations and relationship buildings, but then those conversations lead to even tighter relationships, even stronger work from students in class. So it's a win-win, hopefully, in the end.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, we know that feeling a sense of belonging at school is critical for student success. But a 2021 study by researchers in Australia found a lack of resources focused on belonging. They noted, little is understood about how schools can address this issue. That means teachers are often figuring out how to build community in class without much guidance. But the kinds of approaches we just discussed can help, especially at the start of the year. Two, if you're going to try a game like Jocelyn's Circles of Sameness, the key is balancing structure with fun. Lay out clear guardrails, put on some good tunes, and get kids moving and mixing. And three, starting the school year with explicit efforts to build connections can have a lasting impact for the rest of the year. Ongoing rituals like Henry's daily dedications or referring back to norms that you co-created, like Bobby does, can help your classroom continue to develop those connections all year long. Special thanks to teacher and youth radio coordinator Bobby Shaddix, theater arts educator Jocelyn Green, and high school humanities teacher Henry Seaton. Their strategies for building classroom connections were all profiled by Edutopia's video team, so you can see them in action. We'll link to all three videos and to Henry's excellent article about his daily dedications in our show notes. And we'll also link to Jocelyn's organization, Child's Play New York, and Bobby's youth radio program, Blunt Youth Radio, at WMPG in Maine. If you liked this conversation, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating and a review. This helps others find our show. This episode was produced by Anne Noisani with support from Anne Margaret Warner. It was edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. I'm Kristen Leong. Happy back to school, teachers.